Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Out to the moon, come out, Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Good. Come on. Listen. Are you do shit the right way. Went to the other side. Know what I learned? The game's rigged.
Snowfall is about the rise of the crack cocaine epidemic in the early 1980s in Los Angeles.
There's a storm that's coming, you know, and when that storm comes and the price of cocaine comes down, then it trickles down and becomes something known as crack.
We're not filming a documentary, but you will be educated.
This drug made its way to be one of the most popular drugs in the United States.
We're kind of exploring this moment in time when the bomb that was crack really landed on L.A.
Hey, y'all giving away some new high.
Look how your ass turned out.
The character of Franklin really is the anchor of this show.
He's a young, intelligent, soulful leader.
But chooses to kind of focus his smarts and energy into the drug game. And obviously having no idea what crack is going to do to the place and the people he loves.
How much of that soul and boyish youthfulness is chipped away at him through the actions that he has to embark on. Him moving from a boy to a man and what decisions that means.
Front me a key. I turn it around, quick.
We're following a CIA officer whose name is Teddy McDonald, and he kind of falls into this scheme to use cocaine in order to fund the war down in Nicaragua.
You really think you're the guy to step into this?
Yeah, I think I'm the perfect guy.
He's torn between a sense of patriotism and duty and his own moral compass.
My character is Lucia Villanueva. She is in the distribution of marijuana, and she wants to convert over into the cocaine business.
We also come in through the eyes of a Mexican wrestler, part-time enforcer named Gustavo, wanting to really be a part of this family business he's been working for.
And maybe this dumb guy who looked like the muscle is someone different.
25,000 grams. Cut modestly, still purer than anything coming over the border.
This is a story that needs to be told, that people need to know about.
You have a little bit more grace and compassion for this epidemic and this problem that's still happening today, why certain groups of people are more affected than others.
I think the show does a really great job to show, like, just how tough this journey is on these characters.
It's like it's a really important kind of part of our history as Americans at this particular point in time. The storylines interacting in a way which I think is very kind of surprising and satisfying and cool and fun. And I'm really looking forward to the audience to get to experience those kind of moments.
See if it changes the way you look at American life, American history.
And in Snowfall, you see how many different people find out that the American dream comes at a bit of a heavy price.
Speaking of TV, you know, I know this is going to annoy you when I say this, but my favorite show on television is Snowfall. I know this is going to annoy you when I say this. I know this. Boo!
Have you watched it at all?
Never. What? I'm not really into fairy tales.
Okay.
First of all.
Because the story, as someone who's watched it, was watched every episode, it is clearly the Ricky Ross story. Based on the... I'm not saying
you're
exactly...
Right. And you're right. You're probably right. But it's
all the way to the... There's a whole Nicaraguan Contra with a DEA agent. You know, like... The whole... Based on all the conversations you and I have had together, this is so
they probably
the freeway Ricky
your
Ross.
Interviews, too.
He probably did. John Singleton probably did. Because John Singleton actually met with you before the show came out.
He read my script. He read the movie script. He read the book. He bought one of my demo books.
Okay.
He bought, I had got 10 books when my book came. Before the book actually was delivered to me in bulk, they gave me 10 demos. Well, one guy paid me $100 for a demo book. John Singleton, I think, he gave me $50 for a demo book.
Okay.
Because I wasn't going to sell the demos, and they made me sell them. But yeah, he and I ran into John too recently. It was strange.
Okay, because you guys met up and you guys were talking about doing a project together.
Yeah, I wanted John to direct my movie.
Okay,
well, really, the whole team wanted John to direct the movie.
And John Singleton's phenomenal.
regardless of the differences. You know what I mean? Because Snowfall almost looks like a higher budget Boys in the Hood. You know, it has that same type of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys met up.
But he still missed the mark, though, I can tell you. Just from me talking to people, he doesn't. And I don't really expect him to, you know, to really get it because he didn't live it.
Right.
You know, so I was talking to some people the other day, and they was like, well, what's going to be different than this and Snowfall? And I was like, well, I never saw Snowfall, but I can tell you this here. Snowfall don't know when Big Hugh got out of prison. You know, Snowfall don't know a lot of the other things. I ain't going to say too much.
Yeah,
they'll be trying to pick stuff up.
They called me about
3 months ago. It was like, man, we want you to come on as a consultant. We're running out of material.
You said no.
Of course not. Not now. You know, I don't want to save you.
Yeah.
You know, if you die, you die on your own. I ain't gonna help save you though. I ain't gonna breathe life into you.
It's too bad. It's too bad that you were involved in it. Because like I said, it is very, very similar to your story. Down to the...
Well, I also ran into the actor, too.
Oh, the main guy?
Yeah, the main guy.
The British guy.
I was at Whole Foods one day, and he recognized me, and he came up, and he said how much he wished that I was actually on the set with him.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I would have been there, they would have had to change the name from Franklin to Freeway.
You're right. Two F names. Oh, yeah, wow. They really...
Yeah,
but you know...
I ain't mad, though. I'm not mad at the show. You know, I just don't support it. And I don't really have time. You know, I don't really watch TV anyway.
Right.
I'm too busy, you know, trying to write movie scripts and TV shows and, you know, just do my own thing.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's too bad because they did do a good job on that show. And having you involved would have, I think, made it that much better.
Oh, no. If they would have had me on there, if people in America would have known that that was my story, they would be getting the same kind of results that Netflix is getting with the documentary.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because me being on the street, I get to know what is getting traction. You know, like I know how well your shows are. Like I never looked at your numbers on the Internet.
Yeah.
Not one time have I went on the Internet and looked at your numbers.
Right, but you see the people that approach you.
Right, when I walk through an airport and people come up and they talk about you and they ask me what you like, then that tells me that we got traction.
Yeah.
So the same thing when the documentary hit Netflix, you know, I could tell what a difference it made.
Yeah. Well, I guess the TV series is supposed to be with the executive producers of Power.
Which one, mine?
Yeah.
That deal expired.
Oh, didn't work out.
Nah, not yet. They still on deck. You know, they want Kendrick Lamar to say if I could tie a deal up with Kendrick Lamar, then they would write the check tomorrow.
Kendrick had an appearance on Power. He had a cameo.
Mm,
one
okay.
episode.
But you know, I got other people that we're talking to about doing the series. I really think that Netflix, it would be something that Netflix should have picked up immediately, but I don't know, these people in Hollywood, they just don't, they
I hate dealing with people in Hollywood.
Yeah, they just don't get it.
I absolutely hate it. In fact, the reason why I launched Vlad TV is because I just got sick of having these conversations with TV and movie people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This is why Vlad TV is self-sufficient. And even to this